Happy Lag BaOmer to everyone. Nice to see you. Today we're going to continue our discussion of a Jewish experience in Christian Spain. And we had previously outlined sort of the general background. We then had a special shiur about, of course, a special Yom HaTzmaut, Zionism, religious Zionism, medieval style. And we looked at a number of personalities, including the Ramban, whom we will, God willing, return to today. Today, what I'd like you to do is to forward our discussion of this time period by looking in particular at a number of outstanding personalities. Today and perhaps into next time, we will take a look at some of the great rabbinic personalities of this time period. We'll then parlay that into a discussion of the Maimonidean controversies. As we'll see, there are a number of them. We'll then turn to the rise of mysticism of Kabbalah during this time, and then we'll move toward the conclusion of this era, the events of 1391, 1492, the Inquisition, the expulsion, some of the rabbinic personalities who operated and flourished particularly at that time, the disputation of Tortosa, which takes place 1413 to 1414 as sort of a point of comparison yet contrast with the Ramban's disputation in 1263, and that will take us to the end of the year and this era or this phase of medieval Jewish history. The first person I'd like to look at today is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, the earliest of the personalities that we'll be looking at, lives from approximately, and I say approximately, many of the personalities we'll look at, we don't necessarily have precise dates, some better than others, but him roughly 1180 to 1263, the same year that the Ramban has that very famous disputation that I just referred to. Rabbeinu Yonah is certainly a major Talmudist. He is one of the great Talmudic thinkers of his time, from Girona, eventually settles in Toledo, and his output is very substantial. You open up a Gemara Brachot for just one example, and you will see that you have right there on the page, you have the Rif. The Rif is considered to be an extremely extremely prominent personality, commentator. The Rif appears on the page in the back of the Gemara in much of the same way. The layout is similar to the way that the Gemara itself appears. You have the Rif in the middle. It's flanked in on the one side, the inside margin, by the earlier manuscript of Rashi. Legend has it that it was Rashi's daughter. That is, unfortunately, I suppose, only Rashi's. That's a legend. There is some real evidence that I think that Rashi's daughter helped to copy his writings and some of his manuscripts, but that this is actually her commentary. It seems not to be. It does seem to be an earlier recension of Rashi's own commentary to the Gemara that was then reprinted on the page of the Rif. And then flanking the Rif on the outside, in many Masechtot, many sections of the Gemara of the Shah of Shas, is is the commentary. In other Gemaras, you have the Ran, especially in parts of Moed and throughout much of Nashim. In Ezekiel, you have in certain places the commentary of the Nimuke Yosef, whom we'll touch on briefly a little bit later on as we discuss these different personalities. But in Masechet Brachot in particular, we have Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. The students Rabbeinu Yonah often cite the Rebbe by name. His fingerprints are all over the work, clearly. And this is one of the outstanding and classic outputs in terms of commentary to the Gemara of Rabbeinu Yonah. We also have some of his commentaries, the Aliyot to Rabbeinu Yonah, on Bava Basra, and on Sanhedrin as well. It could be that there are more that are no longer extant, as with many of these things. We no longer have the works anymore, and so they've been lost, and so there isn't always evidence. We don't always know for sure whether or not it's possible, realistic. It's possible that this person actually had more output than we know, and that's important to bear in mind. As well. We also have major Musar works as part of the Uvior of Rabbeinu Yonah. He has a commentary to Pirkei Avot. He has a book, Sefer HaYirah, a book of Jewish ethics about Yirat Shemayim, etc. But probably his classic work is called Sha'arei Teshuvah. Sha'arei Teshuvah, often studied during the period of Elul in preparation for the Yom Noraim, throughout Sar'im Yeshuvah and contemporary Yeshivot, is Kishmo Kein Hu. It is eponymous. It is a work on. The mitzvah of teshuvah. It's an extremely wide-ranging work. It's got lots of stuff there, and it's a classic in the field. Rabbeinu Yonah is considered to be a pietist, is considered to be an ethicist, who is very focused on character, on Yirat Shamayim, and so Shmir HaMitzvot, and so on and so forth. Maimonidean philosophy, not so much. He certainly does not inherit the Rambam's philosophical mindset or approach, much more focused on the character, much more focused on a little bit the theology, but more from within Jewish sources. He does not cite from general philosophical sources in anywhere that I'm familiar with, and it's reflective of a very different kind of environment. Muslim Spain and Christian Spain, as we've said time and time again, were just very different kinds of places, and certainly as consistent with his time in that regard as well. Rabbeinu Yonah also is a played a significant role in one of the Maimonidean controversies. This is after the passing of the Rambam. There were those in the 1230s who wished to, so Rabbeinu Yonah is in his 50s at this point, who wished to ban certain works of the Rambam, claiming that they were likely to and have been leading people astray, that the study of philosophy is something that is dangerous, that's inconsistent with the Jewish tradition, and so they wanted to ban certain parts of the Rambam's works. And at one point, at least, Rabbeinu Yonah acceded to their request and signed off on this ban. They then subsequently did away with the books of the Rambam, perhaps even burning some of his books. A fairly ugly scene. There is a legend that around the year 1242, that Rabbeinu Yonah repented. And a story goes something along the following lines. If you go 2 years before that, in the year 1240, there was the first of the three famous disputations that we've mentioned. We mentioned the Ramban in Spain in 1263. We mentioned briefly today the disputation that we'll explore a little bit in further depth in 1413 to 1414 in Tortosa, which involved a number of rabbis who disputed with, who argued over the course of 21 months. But there was also a disputation prior to each of these and in a different location, namely in Paris, France, in 1240. And the result of this particular disputation is that it led to an edict on the part of King Louis at the time, I think it was King Louis XII, although I'm not certain, that King Louis at that time declared, passed a law, legislated the and orchestrated really the burning of 24 cartloads of the Talmud, of the Gemara, and of the sacred books. Of course, the Talmud was a central part of the disputation, since the Talmud implied that Jesus is the Lord, that he's not the Lord, and that's a big part of the disputations themselves. And this was one of the outcomes of that particular disputation. Disputations never ended well for the Jews, because if they won, then they embarrassed the Christians. And if they lost, then the Christians could claim, the Dominican monks could claim that they need to be that there need to be consequences after the intellectual shortcomings and the fallibility of the Jews has been manifestly proven over the course of the disputation. So the Jews in these debates were very much darned if they did, darned if they didn't. So the, one of the results of this disputation was indeed the burning of these cartloads of the Gemara. Now the burning of cartloads of Gemara might seem to be a terrible thing symbolically, and really a blow, and just a real terrible outcome, but it's more than that. At a time that was hundreds of years before the invention of the printing press, this was something that that was a traumatic and terrible blow to the Jewish people at that time. The future, right? Think about what it took to write and to copy the entirety of Shas, and this was a huge undertaking. It had to all be done by hand. Not everyone knew. You know, there were tzarot. It was a difficult time. There was no guarantee, it would seem, that the tradition would be continued. Rav Soloveitchik has some very moving comments in his commentaries to the keynotes, the recorded lectures that were then penned and written up in book form by Rabbi J.J. Schachter in his book of the Rav's commentaries on the keynote. It's actually a direct transcription from the recorder. The Rav describes the kind of tragedy that the Jews at that time felt had befallen them. And so this was really a very difficult blow. And it was so difficult that, according to legend, it led Rabbeinu Yonah to rethink his decision to have the books of the Rambam banned. And he made the point that if we ourselves choose to ban and burn our own books, so then we give license to our Gentile enemies to do much the same. And so, according to the tradition, he felt badly. He did tshuva, and he essentially recanted his view that had signed off on the cherem against the works of the Rambam. So that's just a few words about Rabbeinu Yonah, but it's clearly reflective of the times, and it's reflective of the ambivalence that many authorities at that time felt toward the Rambam. On the one hand, he was a revered personality. He was larger than life. At the same time, he was someone whose approach to philosophy was deemed to be inconsistent with the values of the time, and downright dangerous, quite frankly, especially for younger people who were not yet fully rooted in the tradition. He was considered to be a real risk. And so Rabbeinu Yonah's own back and forth on this issue, at least according to this legend, clearly is reflective of that tension. Another individual who lived at the Islamic flourish at this time, who also shared this tension and sort of this ambivalence vis-a-vis the works of the Rambam, was one of the great thinkers of all medieval Jewish history, the Ramban. And not to be confused with Rambam himself, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, pronounced at least by Ashkenazim as Ramban, in contradistinction to Ashkenazim's Rambam, as opposed to Sfaradim, who pronounced both Mila Ra, in other words, with the accent on the second syllable, Rambam and Ramban, which can, for me personally, can sometimes be confusing. But either way, right, everyone will call him the Ramban. The only difference of opinion is regard to the Rambam. The Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, living from roughly 1194 to 1270, is actually a cousin and later younger contemporary of Rabbeinu Yonah. He's from Girona, although he draws from the French and southern French Provençal traditions. And the Ramban is a real, within the world of Torah, very much a Renaissance man. He was an individual who rose to extraordinary stature within his community. He was a medical doctor, as so many others as well. But in particular, within the range of areas in Torah, he truly had everything at his fingertips, and he wove together all of these perspectives in a truly wondrous kind of way. For example, his mastery of halakha and Shas, the Gemara, is manifest throughout. He wrote a three in what's now collected as two or three, the Machon Yerushalayim, the green edition of the Ramban's Chidush, now collected in three volumes. That's an outstanding commentary to the majority of Shas, and is a critical work on any Masechet on which he wrote. He wrote any number of halachic monographs on a wide range of areas in halacha, on the laws of lulav. He has a book called, he has a set of halachot on Bechorot, the laws of what was once Bechor Behemat Tahora, the kosher animal that had to be brought in the Mizbeach, and Bechor Behemat Tzmeah, the non-kosher animal that had to be exchanged for the kosher animal, which was then brought in the Mizbeach, and the contemporary issues of Pidyon HaBen, right, the redeeming of the firstborn son, the halachot of inheritance, and so on and so forth, a classic work. In that regard, he has a collection of halachot on the laws of Hafrashat Chala. He has, as well, a book called Dina Degarmi. I have right here on my bookshelf a series of lectures that were written up by students of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein on the Ramban's Dina Degarmi. The Dina Degarmi is essentially where Garmi essentially is an aspect of the laws of torts and damages, which addresses a case that falls somewhere in between full-fledged direct damages on the one hand, koach rishon, something direct, and what we call grama on the other hand, issues related to the kosher switch contemporarily and all those kinds of things. And garmi falls somewhere in between. It's direct, but it's indirect. There's actually some question as it is, what constitutes garmi? What about metaphysical damage? If I cause something of mitamis, something, I cause it to become impure, and therefore the kohen can no longer eat his truma. Or what if I take a contract that intrinsically doesn't have a certain value, but legally does, right? It's not a piece of gold, but it does represent value in a particular society. In a legal system, what is the status of damages that are performed to that kind of contract or that document? All these halachot dina degarmi, again, another area. So just get a sense as to how wide-ranging the Ramban's treatments really were. That's just some examples, and we'll see more as we go along. The Ramban also wrote many hasagot, many critical commentaries on, or comments on, numerous great thinkers. So just to take some examples, his hasagot to the Baal HaMa'or. So you know, if you take a look back at that same page of the Rif, so you have the Rif in the middle. In fact, in some yeshiva, they actually study the Rif's commentary as the centerpiece that they're learning in place of the Gemara. They went that far. On the Rif, who's considered to be one of the great heroes of the Sephardic tradition, even though he wasn't from Spain, he was from Fez, Morocco, is considered to be one of the greats of the earlier generations, and he cast a shadow over all the works that were written by, and all the study of the Sephardic, subsequent Sephardic halachic authors, the halachists. And we know that there was a young man, a young rabbi from Provence, from southern France, Rav Zerachi Halevi, who writes the Baal HaMa'or in a series of critiques on the Rif. And the Ramban is up in arms. How can this be? And he writes a sefer of the Mochemes Hashem, the War of God, in defense of the Rif, a great hero. Who does the young whippersnapper think he is? He might call himself HaMa'or HaKaton. He's just humble. He's this little, that's the name of his works, some of his works, right? The Baal HaMa'or, and he calls it the little light, right? It's just the moon. It's no big deal. I'm a small little guy. These are just my thoughts on the Rif. Says the Ramban, it's very nice you have this humility, but as a matter of fact, you're rejecting out of hand, right, the great hero of our tradition. Who do you think you are, taking on the Rif at such a young age? And you're an outsider. You're from southern France. This is the Sephardic tradition. You're often something closer to Ashkenaz, and so on and so forth. So that's one series of hasagos in defense of sort of an entrenchment of that those traditions. He also writes, for example, hasago to the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam is really the first one to systematize both the rules, the underlying principles, this 14 shorashim that we discussed with regard to the Sefer HaMitzvot, as well as the actual enumeration of those 245 positive commandments, complemented by the 365 negative ones as well. The Ramban attacks the Ramban. He says, the Ramban, first of all, at one point he asks, how do we even know that there are 613? An interesting discussion. There are midrashim that support that, but the Ramban says maybe there are other gemaras that, there's at least one gemara that might indicate otherwise. Is that an absolute? The Ramban ultimately accepts 613, and yet, the fact that he raises the question is pretty remarkable in its own right. And then, one by one, he disagrees. He says, this one the Ramban counted, and I think you should not have counted. That one the Ramban did not count, such as the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, which we discussed 2 weeks ago during that special Yom HaTzmat. Here in the Ramban says, no, there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and so on and so forth. So the Ramban, in addition to his strict halachic works, his commentaries to Shas, also has a number of hasagos as well. In addition to all of that, he has a number of drashot and more integrated works as well, which kind of pull together halachic and hashkafic aspects. So that, for example, you have Torat HaAdam, which is an incredible work, which is wildly influential, which basically discusses the human life cycle. It starts with birth, halachot of the fetus in the mother's womb, and then through childbirth, brit milah, pidyon haben, etc., and then ultimately turning to issues such as bikur cholim, Hilchot Avilut, and then he discusses issues of Schar Ve'onesh and reward and punishment in the end of days, the Messianic era, and what happens to souls and Olam Haba, and all these esoteric kinds of issues, all discussed by the Ramban. So Torat HaAdam was also highly influential and had decisive influence on the unfolding of Jewish tradition in terms of practical halakha. His laws of Avilut had incredible influence, a very substantial percentage of the tour, one of the classic halachic compendiums that then in turn had decisive influence on the Shulchan Aruch. The tour, basically the laws of Avilut, are largely lifted with attribution directly, well, still lifted unless directly from the Ramban Sarat HaAdam. So that was incredibly influential. Similarly, his drasha for Rosh Hashanah, which he delivered after his aliyah toward the very end of his life, discusses on the one hand the technical laws of the shofar and its details, and discusses as well themes of din and rachamim and so on and so forth, all these deeper, profound kinds of aspects. I'll mention as well one other drasha, which is his Torat Hashem Tzimima, which is a work in which he discusses as far as the notion that essentially the Torah, the text of the Torah, is composed of, in secret code, the names of God. Almost as if when you study the Torah, you're accessing the divine, as it were, directly. And that is a great segue to his commentary to the Torah, because in his introduction to the commentary to the Torah, the Ramban writes, exactly this, that all the Torah is the Shemot of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he provides foundation for this idea. We've also mentioned this in a side when we discussed Ibn Ezra way back when, that the Ramban here has a very striking phraseology. He says that Ibn Ezra, who is more interested in Pshat and less reliant upon Chazal, so Ramban says that although for Rashi I have reverence, and you might have thought that for Ibn Ezra I have disdain, in fact the Ramban writes something very striking. Four words. He said that for Ibn Ezra I have Tochacha migula, explicit rebuke, in other words, openly I'm critical of Ibn Ezra, the ahava misuteret. And yet at the same time, I have hidden love and embrace for Ibn Ezra and everything that he has to offer. The Ramban's commentary, Torah, is some would suggest his magnum opus. I've mentioned previously that Rav Lichtenstein said that if he were in a Robinson Crusoe situation, stuck on the islands, he would bring the Ramban al Torah as his chosen sefer. That's big stuff. That's a high compliment. It's written toward the end of his life, and again, it integrates, as so many of his other works do, brilliantly, his ability to connect to the pshat of the Torah. It incorporates drash, it incorporates some philosophy, incorporates in particular Kabbalah. The Ramban was a great mystic. It's been estimated that upwards of 10% of his commentary to the Torah is Al-Pi Kabbalah, and he introduces these sections by the terminology of Al-Derech Ha'emet. Also remarkable, a couple of other things, the Ramban includes archaeological findings, and he interweaves those with his commentary to the Torah as well. For example, he argues the value of the shekel on the basis of certain archaeological findings, which he uses to weigh in on how much a shekel cost and was valued at the time of the Torah. What's also fascinating is that the Ramban has a certain kind of psychological sensitivity that he brings to bear in his commentary to the Torah as well. So that, for example, you find that the Ramban shows a certain kind of humane sensitivity and insight into human character. So, for example, just to give one case, in the classic embrace between Yaakov and Yosef, so the Torah says in Parsha Vayigash, Vayipol al tzavaro vayevk, he fell on his shoulders and he cried. So the question is, who cried? And then the Mefarshim split. Was it Yosef who cried or was it Yaakov? The Ramban sides with those who maintain that it was Yaakov who cried. And his reasoning is, he says, who is likely to cry more? Is it the son, who is now in a position of nobility, who's done so well and been so successful over the course of all these years? Or the old, wizened father who thought that his son had been last, who after 22 years finally recovers him and finally reconnects? Who do you think is going to cry more, says Ramban? Of course it's the father who is going to be more likely to cry. So the Ramban is able to really capture the pathos of this moment and to really connect with the depth and the sort of the humanity and the psychological dimension of this experience as well. And that too is an outstanding aspect of his philosophy. The Ramban also writes just lucidly, clearly, both traditional and independent-minded at the same time. It's truly a fantastic and outstanding commentary. And it's, after Rashi, is probably the most influential one, subsequent commentary that was written to the Torah. Just to point out that in terms of Tanakh, the Ramban wrote on Eov as well. It was not uncommon for Rishon to write on Eov. It's very philosophical. It deals with issues of Tzadik Viralo. It intersects with many of the issues that the Ramban wrote about in Torah Ha'adam, and he and many others wrote commentaries to Eov in addition. I'm going to stop here. Next week we'll perhaps touch on the disputation, which we discussed to some degree in the Shir, the Yom HaTzma'ut Shir, especially the focus on his Aliyah. We'll touch on that as well, and then we'll turn to the Rashba, the Ritva, and a number of other Sephardic classic commentaries as we continue. Everyone have a wonderful day.